Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Not a lot of us here today, so we can keep this pretty interactive. Stop me whenever we can do Q&A as we go. We can always do Q&A at the end as well. I'm sure most of you watched Scott Guthrie's talk at either the Meet event last week or in his session on Monday. He spent about 5 minutes talking about Windows Azure caching, the new release that went into preview last week. We're going to spend this entire session doing a deep dive on that, right? So we're going to double-click. I'll tell you a little bit about why we're here, how we got here, some of the benefits, why this model is better than what's out there today, and we'll do some demos. So my name is Shyam Seshadri. I'm one of the program managers in the caching product team. So we own the cache platform on-premise as well as in the cloud. Here's a quick look at the agenda for today. I'll spend a few minutes doing a 101 on caching. At this point, I'm pretty sure most of you will know what caching is, what it's about, but we'll spend about 5, maybe 10 minutes doing a quick overview. We'll then spend most of this talk talking about the new model of caching, right? So that'll be most of what we spend our time on. And then I'll have demos. We'll look at the developer experience and some of the features that get lit up with this new model of caching. Here are our session takeaways. Caching itself is a really easy, fast, and now cheap way to improve your application's performance, right? And reduce that database on your reduce the load on your DB. There's a new model of caching that's out there. It's in preview, and it's available today. And hopefully, at the end of this session, you will be convinced as well that this is really the best cache on Windows Azure, right? It's faster, cheaper, easier to deploy, easier to manage. And yeah, hopefully you'll agree that it is the best of the caching options out there. OK, so let's start with some basic cache concepts. What is Windows Azure Cache? It's a distributed, flexible, in-memory cache for pretty much any type of data, right? So any form of data that can be serialized, you can put in an in-memory cache. You can put in the Windows Azure Cache. The basic idea is to make your app go faster, right? That's the basic point of putting stuff in a cache, is that you don't have to hit the database all the time. Getting stuff out of an in-memory cache makes your app perform better. How does it do that? So what I have here is a really simple block diagram of what a typical app looks like. We have a web tier up there that in the Windows Azure world is implemented on web roles, right? That's the front-facing tier of an app. Behind that, we have a BI tier, typically implemented on worker roles. And then all the way at the bottom, we have a data tier. Now, this could be a flat database like table store, blob store, or a relational database like SQL, okay? So let's say a couple of users show up in my app, and those few resources that I have up there, you know, one, two instances, small instances, just fine. It can handle that load, no problem. But then when some more users show up, the load on those front-end servers starts to increase, right? There's more traffic coming in, the load starts to increase. So what do we typically do in a case like this? We throw in a load balancer, and we scale out compute, right? It's a pretty standard way of scaling an app is to increase the number of instances and throw in a load balancer out there. Okay, that's fine. But let's say a couple more users show up. The load on that front tier is increasing more and more. So we can continue with this approach of adding more compute instances and scaling out. And eventually, the load will shift, the bottleneck will shift further south, and you'll need to scale out that BI tier as well. Okay, again, pretty standard stuff, scaling compute when the load increases. But we'll eventually get to a point where there we go. We'll eventually get to a point where the bottleneck is moving further south, right? It's no longer my web tier. It's no longer my BI tier. It's my data tier. So every user that comes on to my app is causing me to add some data to my database. It's causing me to read stuff out of my database. And that's bloating my DB up. And it's causing performance to be impacted by that. And what we see is, users start to see performance issues. They see dropped connections. and generally my application's performance starts to suffer. So typically, caching fits in the picture right there, in between the web role, the web tier, and the BI tier, and the data, right? So you put cache right in between those two tiers, and in the cache goes stuff that doesn't really need to be in a DB. The fact is, there are a number of types of data that probably do belong in a persistent database, right? You do want to have them in a persistent DB. But there's a number of other types of data that make fantastic candidates to put in an in-memory cache, right? So here are just a few examples of the kinds of things that are fantastic things to put in an in-memory cache, right? Just a few real-world examples, actually. Now, if you look closely at this, we can group these types of examples. We can group this into three generic types, right? The first type, or the first group, is what's called reference data. The idea for reference data is it's something that is relatively constant, doesn't change very often, and it's read very, very often, right? So a classic example like I have up there is product catalog in an online shopping website, right? That's something that doesn't change very often. Every time a user connects to my app, I go read stuff out of the catalog, and I just present it to the user, right? Stays pretty constant. It's a great candidate to put in an in-memory cache because I don't need to hit my DB every time, right? I'm reading the same data over and over again. I can just pull it out of an in-memory cache. The second type of data is what's called activity data. This is the type of data that gets built, that gets generated as a user is connected to my app and as the user is moving about in my app, right? So as they're doing stuff on the app, we build this data, we construct this data, and the size of this data grows. So sticking with the same example of an online shopping website, the classic example here is the shopping cart, right? So when the users connect, they click on stuff, they add stuff to the shopping cart, that shopping cart object grows. And that this type of data typically tends to live for a shorter amount of time as compared to reference data. But again, a good candidate to put in an in-memory cache as opposed to a DB. And of course, the last is called resource data. Now, this is somewhat of a combination between reference and activity data. The classic example is an airplane seating chart, right? There's a common resource, which is that airplane seating chart, which multiple users are accessing. And they're probably accessing it at the same time, right? So I'm sure most, if not all of you, went to your airline website and picked a seat out on your flight to Orlando. Now, when you pick seat 15A, the fact that you picked 15A needs to reflect out quickly, right? You want other users to know that you've picked 15A so that no one else takes it up. And so that's another great candidate to put in an in-memory cache because latency is important. Putting it in a cache is better than putting it in a DB so that these changes reflect out quickly. I just spent a few minutes scratching the surface of what caching is about. There's another session later today at 2:30. Shai Cohen, who's right there, is presenting that session. And he's going to go deep into caching concepts, right? So if you're interested in understanding what to cache, how to cache, when to cache, I recommend going and attending that session as well. Now, let's talk about flavors of in-memory cache from Microsoft. How many of you have built applications or have used Windows Server App Fabric? Okay, a bunch of you. That is our on-premise caching solution. The most recent version was released in December 2011, so about 6 months ago. It's called V1.1. Now, how many of you have tried caching on Windows Azure? Okay, again, a few hands. On Windows Azure, we have what's called the Windows Azure Shared Cache. That is the version of cache that's in production today, right? So if you have an app that's running in Azure using caching, then you're using what's called the shared cache. What we also released, or what we also previewed just last week, is a new model of caching, which shipped with the June 2012 SDK. Right? So this is another model of caching that's available in Windows Azure, in preview. And now we'll spend the rest of our session going deep into that, right? So hopefully this gives you an idea of the landscape of what Microsoft offers in terms of in-memory caching. Okay. Now, when we released the Windows Azure Shared Cache in April 2011, we got some really fantastic response. There's a bunch of people building some amazing applications on Azure, and they're using the shared cache. But we also listened closely to the kind of feedback that we've been hearing about the shared cache. And here are some of the things we heard. The first thing we heard is that you'd like to see a better quota management system. How many of you know about the quotas in Windows Azure Cache? Okay, lots of hands going up. The reason we have the quota is the shared cache is a multi-tenant service, right, as the name implies. We have to ensure that everybody who signs up for a shared cache gets fair access to cache. Right? So we have these quotas in place that allow us to guarantee a certain amount of access to cache, or guarantee a certain quality of service. The feedback we got is customers would like to know where they are at with respect to the quota. Right? So where is my app with respect to the quota? How far away from it am I? And then warn me before I hit it. I'd like to know before I hit the quota so that I can do something about it, right? Scale out or change to a higher tier or something like that. It's a pretty fair ask. Today, when you build an app against the shared cache, you go to the portal and you get a connection string. You pull that connection string into your app, and that's your only interface to cache, right? So you don't see what's happening behind that connection string. And the feedback we got is the service could be lesser of a black box. Right? Tell us what's happening behind that connection string. We need a little more maybe control and a little more flexibility. Our caches today are from sizes 128 MB all the way up to 4 gig. And there are a number of apps that require bigger caches, right? 8 GB, 10 GB, 20, 30 GB of cache. And so the feedback was, hey, we'd like bigger caches. Of course, lowering the cost. The pricing model starts at $45 for the 128 MB cache, and the feedback was we'd like to see that price point come down. And of course, all of that has got to come with no compromises to performance, right? Because that's truly the bread and butter of caching. So all of these things, bigger caches, more isolation, more control, but no compromises to performance. So the performance bar has got to be the same. You got to hold the bar for performance. Now, we took all of this feedback, and we sort of fed it into our planning process, into our thinking. And we realized that the only way to come up with a compelling cache offering is to raise the bar. Right? So what does raising the bar mean? We could give you more visibility into the quotas. Right? We could tell you where your app is with respect to the quota. We could warn you before you hit the quota. But what if we got rid of the quotas altogether? Right? What if we said, hey, we'll just not have any quotas at all? We could tell you what's happening behind that connection string. We could give you more visibility. But what if we gave you the same amount of control over cache as you get over your own app? We could give you bigger caches, so go up to 8 GB, 16 GB, 20, 30 GB. But what if we gave you hundreds of GB of cache? Right? What if we just allowed you to go big? We could lower the cost, bring the price down by a few dollars. But what if we said, cache, no premium for cache. You don't pay anything extra for cache at all. And of course, what if we did all of that and not only held the performance bar, right? Not only kept latency as low as it is, what if we made it go twice as fast? So we thought if we could do all of that, that would be a pretty compelling offering. And so that's exactly what we released last week into preview. The Windows Azure cache that's in preview not only does that, it does all of that and then a lot more, right? So let's take a look at what that is. This new model of caching is a little different from what's out there today. The new model of caching is one where cache is now part of your app. Right? It's not an entity that you consume. It's not a service that you consume. It's something that's very intrinsic to your app. It's part of your app. You deploy the cache server, the cache cluster bits, onto regular web and worker roles, just like you deploy your app code. Right? So it just runs on plain old web and worker roles. The cache cluster itself will live inside of your cloud service. Okay? So again, not an external entity, not a service that you consume. It's part of your own cloud service. It's part of your app. And you scale it, manage it, monitor cache, just like you scale, manage, and monitor your own application. Okay? So cache is now intrinsic to the app. It's one with the app. And this model is pretty different from what's out there right now. Let's go a little deeper and look at exactly how this works. For starters, when you download the June 2012 Windows Azure SDK, everything you need to build an application with cache is now on your dev box, right? Because the cache server bits are part of the SDK. In fact, if you look in the SDK under that folder, bin, plugins, and caching, the server bits are actually in there, right? So our server binaries are in the SDK. So when you get the SDK, you get everything you need to build an app with cache. You deploy cache or you put cache on plain old web and worker roles, just like you put your app code on. And we'll look at a demo. We'll see exactly how that works. When you click package, the CSPKG, the package that's built, contains cache in it. Right? It has your app, and it also has cache right alongside. And then when you deploy your app into the cloud, inside your cloud service is cache right alongside your app. OK? Everybody with me? Question?
My question. I downloaded the SDK
and the caching subfolder underneath the bin folder. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between those DLLs and the one and the bin folder? No, there's a folder called bin plugins caching, right? The first one in yellow. That contains the server bits, the cache server bits packaged as a plugin. You don't ever need to go into that folder, by the way. I'll actually show you how to deploy it. It's really easy through VS. You don't actually need to go into the folder and reference any DLLs or anything. What we also have under the ref folder, ref caching preview, is the cache client DLLs. So the bin plugins folder contains the cache server DLLs. The ref caching preview contains the client DLLs, right? So both server and client are in there. Another question? No, you're not. Let me repeat the question. The current service is distributed. With the new model, when you put it on a role, do you lose the distributed nature of the cache? You don't. And I'll talk about a couple of deployment models. You'll see how that actually works. Right? OK? So let's click through this again. OK, so that's the new model. Let's quickly talk about why this model is better. Right? What are the benefits of this model? What makes it better? To start with, no quotas, no throttling at the cache level, right? Because cache is part of your app is the only thing that's consuming this cache. Nobody else is using it, right? It's all for you. And so you can use as much of cache as you want. The only thing that limits you is the physical resources available to your role instances, right? So if you deploy cache on a medium-sized instance, there's a certain amount of bandwidth that comes with a medium instance. That's the only thing that limits how much cache you can access. There's no cache level quotas like there is with the shared cache. We have these two deployment topologies. I'll talk about that in a bit. Co-located and dedicated. Gives you the flexibility to deploy cache exactly the way you want to, and really lets you maximize your resources. And again, because it's your app, you get as much control over cache as you get over your own application. There's no premium for cache, right? So like I said, when you go get the SDK, everything you need to build an app is already there. So there's no extra sign up. There's no plan to opt into. There's no premium cost. The only thing you pay for is the compute instances on which cache is deployed, right? The web or the worker role instances, the compute is the only thing you pay for. it's really, really easy to scale this cache now. Scaling the cache is as simple as adding instances to the role on which it's deployed, right? So adding more instances makes the cache bigger. Removing instances makes it smaller, right? So we go into the portal and move that slider back and forth. The size of the cache grows and shrinks dynamically. And your app doesn't have to even know about it. You can scale up or scale out to hundreds of GB of cache. And this can be deployed on small, medium, large, or extra large roles. Really easy developer experience. I know we talked about bin, plugins, ref, all of this stuff, but you don't ever need to go in there, right? I'll show you a demo of how easy it is to actually set this up. You don't ever need to go into the folders and reference DLLs. We have a fantastic VS experience that makes it super easy to deploy. And then when you hit F5 on your dev box, the emulator will bring cache up right alongside your app. And so you can do full fidelity debugging of cache on your dev box before you deploy to the cloud. And here's something else that we're really excited about. We now support the Memcache protocol as well. Right? So any of you building apps that use Memcache? Yeah, a few of you. So we now support the Memcache protocol, which means existing applications, Java, PHP, .NET, any app that's wired up to run against Memcached can be brought into Windows Azure, and you can just point it at an Azure Cache cluster, and with no code changes, your app will just work. Right? And I have a demo of that as well. Those of you who've used AppFabric Server, a bunch of these features will look familiar to you. All the features that were available on-premise, they're all available in the cloud now. Right? So multiple named caches, you can have different named caches and put different types of data in each cache, apply different policy to it. Regions and tags lets you tag objects, tag keys, and then query based on the tags. High availability, local cache, all the stuff that was on-prem is now available in Windows Azure as well. And of course, performance, right? Bread and butter of caching. The performance is actually improved by 4 times, right? So in our tests, we're seeing latencies as low as 1.5 milliseconds for a simple GET request. So a lot of work has gone in there as well to bring that performance, to improve that performance and bring that latency down. Okay, before we look at demos, there's one more thing that I do want to talk about, which is deployment topologies. I mentioned that there's two deployment topologies that give you the flexibility to deploy cache just the way you want to. The first of those topologies is called a dedicated deployment. Right, or a dedicated role. The idea here is something like this. Let's say I have this app. It's got 3 instances of a web role and 2 instances of a worker role. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stand up a new worker role, right? 2-3 instances of a new worker role, and just deploy cache on that worker role. So my cache cluster, my cache ring, gets formed across all the nodes or all the instances of that role. So to answer your question, is it distributed? It is. It's distributed across all instances of a role. So I could have 2 instances, I could have 20 instances. The ring will be distributed across all instances of a given role. Now, this cache is accessible by any other instance in this cloud service, right? So web role 1, any of those instances can use this cache. Worker role 1 can also use this cache, right? So any instance in this cloud service can talk to this cache. And again, the only thing you pay for here is the cost of compute, right? So if I have it on 2 instances of compute is all I pay for. The second topology is called a co-located topology or a co-located deployment. Again, let's assume that my app has 3 web role instances and 2 worker role instances. But I have some spare memory, some spare CPU, and some spare network I/O across these instances that I'm not using, right? I have it, I'm not using it. What I can do is I can deploy cache on the same role as my app. I can co-locate cache on the same role as my app and take advantage of those resources that I've already paid for. And I can do that on a web role, or I can do it on a worker role. Right? In fact, I could do it on both. That just means I'd have two different clusters. But you can do it on either one. And again, like before, this cache can be accessed by any other instance in this cloud service. And that includes the code, my app code that's running on worker role one. Those instances, that app can access the cache. Web role one can also access this cache. Right? And in this case, I'm deploying cache on a role that I've already paid for. I already own this. So there's no extra cost at all. Right? This is sort of free. OK? Any questions on this stuff? Yeah. So what we do is we look at your key. So by the way, the question is, if you insert the same key on both instances, what happens? It's a distributed cache, so your app doesn't actually deal with instances, or the cache client doesn't actually deal with instances. It just does a put on a key. We'll take the key, we'll hash the key, and we'll map it to one of those two servers. And so every key will live only on one node, unless you have the high availability feature. I'll talk about that in a bit. But it just lives on one of the nodes of that cluster. And when you request the data, when you get the key, we have a routing table that tells our client where the key is, and so it'll get it out of the right node. But every data will live only on one node. That's a single cache cluster, right? So your cache client, which is, let's say, running on the other role, gets a unified view of the cluster. It just deals with the cluster as a single entity, right? Did that answer the question? No, there's no collision. Well, the second one would just sort of override the first one because it's the same key, right? There's one key in the cluster. Yep, that's another question. Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So the question is, if you have it like this on two worker roles and one of them goes down, what happens? I'll demo that and I'll show you what happens. Yeah. Okay. Between co-located and dedicated? That's a good question. So the question is there a performance difference between the co-located and the dedicated topologies? With the dedicated topology, there's nothing else using that role, right? Nothing else using that instance. So it's all completely available to cache. With the co-located topology, there is your app running there as well. So it's up to you to do capacity planning to make sure that cache gets the right amount of resources. Based on that, you will get the right amount of latency, the right performance. But if you require predictable latency that doesn't change, then the dedicated topology is better. Because in this case, if your app load increases, then because you're running on shared resources, that can cause some kind of contention. It doesn't change the latency. The numbers will be the same under no load, but as the load increases, that's when you'll notice slightly more predictable latencies with the dedicated topology. Right? Yep. Sure. Okay. Cache, right, okay. So two questions. The first one is, are we using internal endpoints for communication? We are. Only this cloud service can see the cache, so you can't access it from outside. So we are using internal endpoints. The second question is there a difference between a regular worker role and a cache worker role? Okay. So for those of you who aren't familiar with what a cache worker role is, we'll look at this in the demo as well. In VS, when you add a worker role, there's a worker role, and then there's a cache worker role. So what's the difference between the two of them? There's not a lot. The cache worker role just comes with the cache, with caching pre-deployed, if you will, right? Pre-selected. And I'll show you what that means. So there's a very slight difference, but at the end of the day, it's still just a worker role. Right? Okay? Okay, so let's go right there. Let's go crack open VS, and let's go take a look at this. So the first demo I'm doing is the dev experience. Right? We'll see how easy it is to add cache to an application. So what I'll do is I will, not build, but open a project. So this is a plain old, you know, Azure app. It's running on a single web role instance. What we do is we sort of simulate loading some data out of a DB. Right? So let me just run this guy. So what we're doing is we are loading some stuff from a DB, and there's a little sleep there to kind of simulate that. So it's going to take about 2 seconds to load this page. What we'll now do is we'll go into this app, and we'll add caching to this app. Okay. In this demo, I'm going to deploy the dedicated topology. In a demo right after this, I'll show you the co-located as well, so you can see the difference between the two. So let's deploy the dedicated topology here. For that, what I need to do is add a new role to my app, right? So let's go to the roles. Let's hit add a new worker role project. This is what you were talking about, right? There's a regular worker role. Everybody knows what that is. And there's the cache worker role. So let's actually add the regular worker role, and then I'll tell you what the difference is between that and a cache worker role. Okay, so this worker role is the one that's going to run my cache. Let's go into the properties of this worker role. And you'll see that there's a new tab down here called caching. All I need to do to deploy cache on this role is hit this checkbox. That's it, right? So the cache bits themselves were in that bin plugins folder. Hitting that imports the plugin, okay? By simply selecting this checkbox, I've now made this role run cache. And as soon as I did that, you saw that the two radio buttons kind of lit up. These are those two deployment topologies, co-located or dedicated. So if I have other code running on this app or on this role, I can pick co-located. But in this case, I don't. So I'm just going to pick dedicated role. What this means is all the memory available on the instances of this role are available for cache. Right? The whole role is dedicated to cache. The cache worker role comes with this setup pre-configured. Okay, so if I add a cache worker role, I get the exact same thing. That checkbox is selected, and it's set to dedicated role. That's it. It just simplifies that process if you want a dedicated role. Now, down below, I can add named caches, which is the logical cache containers I was telling you about. I can have different policy for each. So I could have a 20-minute TTL here, a 10-minute TTL in a different cache. So I can do all of that stuff. For my demo, I don't need that, so I'm just going to go with the default cache. And that's it, right? So that's step one. Step one was to deploy the cache cluster, and I've done that. Literally 2 clicks, okay? Now what I need to do is I need to consume this cache, right? So my web role is going to consume this cache. It's going to talk to this cache. To do that, I need to do a couple of things. I need to add some references, and I need to add some config to my web.config file. Now, to simplify this, to automate that as well, we have a NuGet package, which is called Windows Azure Caching Preview. So I'm going to go ahead and install that guy. And as you can see, it's doing some stuff in the background. What it did is it added my cache client DLLs, right? It added references to my cache client DLLs. And it edited my web.config file. All the way at the bottom, it added this config, okay? This is my cache client config. This config tells my cache client that's running on the web role where the server is. So in this app, where is my server? Where's my cache cluster running on? Right? It's running on worker role 1. So I need to tell my client where the server is. So all I'll do for that is I will replace this placeholder string with worker role 1. Okay? And I'm done. I've now set up my server. I've now set up my client, and I've pointed my client at my server, right? That's it. I'm set up now to run my app with cache. I'm going to go in and just add the code, do it. So let's go do that first using microsoft.applicationserver.caching. I'm going to create my cache, my data cache object, and instantiate it. I'm going to use the cache aside programming model. Everybody familiar with the cache aside programming model? The first thing we'll do is we'll look for what we want in the cache right there. If we find it in the cache, we'll return it. Right? So we go to the cache. If it's there, we'll return it. If it's not there, then we'll go pull it out of the DB, which we're simulating in this case. And then on the way back, we'll put it in the cache. Right? So let's do that one more time. I go into the cache first. If I find what I want, I return it. If I don't find what I want, I go to my DB. I pull the data out of the DB, put it in the cache on the way back, so that the next time I look for the data, it's in the cache. Okay? That's it. Let's run this guy. So again, the first time it's going to take a little bit of time because the role is coming up in the emulator, the cache client is coming up, it's connecting. My code is going to go look in the cache, it's not going to find it, and it's going to go get it from the DB, which took about 6 seconds. But the moment I hit refresh, I'm able to get it in millisecond latencies, right? Because the second time I look for the data, it's already in the cache, and I'm able to retrieve it really, really quickly. Okay? So that's how easy it is to build an app with cache. Three steps, add the server, add the client through a NuGet package, and make one small tweak to a config file. And then you can start writing your code to consume cache. The question? Are you talking about local cache or the emulator? In the emulator? Yeah, in the emulator, you don't want to do scale testing, obviously, right? The emulator is for functionality testing. So two, three instances, maybe four instances is okay. Bigger than that, and the emulator is not really designed for scale and stress testing. So you want to use the emulator to make sure functionality works, but you really want to do scale and stress testing in staging, right? So. Okay. Let's now go look at something else. We have this little app that's already deployed into Windows Azure. As you can see, it's my cache, my weather app, cloudapp.net. So it's running in Windows Azure right now. It's a really simple weather app. Okay? We're going to use this app to look at three features that we now have in the cloud that were previously there only on-prem. We'll look at local cache, we'll look at regions and tags, and we'll look at high availability. And so somebody asked me a question of what happens when one role goes down. We'll take a look at what happens when that happens. This app is deployed. There's a web role. There's a couple of instances of a web role. And there's a three-node cache cluster, okay, which means I have the dedicated topology with three instances. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add some data to my cache. You typically do this with a background process, but for the demo, we'll just add it ourselves. So city is my key. So let me add Orlando. Temperature is my value. How hot do you think it's out there? 91? Hot, 90, hotter. And we'll put some tags. We'll put Florida, and we'll put South. Okay, so it added that to the cache. We can add something else. We can add Portland. Portland's probably a lot cooler. It's in Oregon, and it's in the Northwest. Okay, so I'm just adding some stuff to the cache. I already have a lot of other keys in the cache, but I'm just adding a couple more here. We'll go query for this now. So let's query by city, okay, which is key. As you can see, I'm able to retrieve it in the cloud in 1.3 milliseconds, right? So the data that I just put in, I'm able to retrieve it in 1.3 milliseconds in the cloud. So that's pretty fast. But I can make this go even faster. If I say use local cache and just get the same thing again, I'm getting it down to microsecond latencies, right? So let's do that one more time. 0.009 milliseconds, okay? So with local cache, what happens is my cluster is running on the worker role. When I get the data out of that, I put it in a local copy, a local cache on my client, right? So I can get it out of the client cache in microsecond latencies. There's no serialization, deserialization cost. It's super fast. But then the next question is, what happens if the data changes on the cluster? How does my client, does my client keep getting stale data? So let's go see what happens there. So we'll go back to my load page. Let's go add Orlando again. Let's make it 99 degrees, right? It's Florida and South. So we just changed the temperature to 99. I'm going to get the same key. I'm not going to change this. And it's automatically updated to 99, right? How did that happen? We have a feature called notifications, where the client will poll the server and say, hey, I have these keys in my local cache. Has anything changed? And so in this case, the server said, yep, the value's changed. And so my client goes and gets the latest value, right? And that notification is a configurable interval. You can have it down to as low as 1 second. So every second, your client's going to poll. Or you can have it much higher, you know, a few minutes, if you feel the data is more static, OK? Now, We can also query for data by key, by tags. So let's go do that. Let's query for Florida, which is one of the tags I put. And so all the keys that I've put in the cache with the tag Florida can be retrieved that way. I can also say something like South, and I have a bunch of cities in here from the South that all have the same tag. I can do smarter things. I can say, get me only those keys that have either Washington as a tag or Florida as a tag. Right? So I could do that too. So here I'll do Washington or Florida, and I get Seattle, Orlando, Miami, and Jacksonville. Right? So we have an API called getByAnyTags, where you can pass in a list of tags, and we'll get any key that has any one of those tags. We also have an AND operation, right? So getByAllTags. So you can say, here are four tags, get me all the keys that have all of these four tags. Right? So you can really build rich applications with this kind of stuff. People have been doing it on-prem. You can now do it in Windows Azure as well. Okay. Now, let's go do a really fun demo. Let's look at high availability. Like I said, I have a 3-node cache cluster deployed in the cloud. What I'm going to do is I will insert 36 random keys into this cache. Okay, so let's go do that. We put 36 random keys into this cache. Let me go get it and show you what these keys are. Here they are. The key is just a random GUID. And the cache node tells you which node the key lives on. Okay? Because it's a random key, our hashing function ensures that it's pretty evenly distributed across all the nodes in my cluster. All right? So I have some data coming out of instance 1, some data coming out of 2, 0. Right? It's pretty fairly spread out. What I'm now going to do is I'm going to TS into instance 0. And I will stop the cache service. Okay, I'm going to kill the process on instance 0. What do you think is going to happen when I do this? It's an in-memory cache, right? So where do you think the data goes? It's lost, right? It's in memory. But because I have the high availability feature turned on, the data is not lost from the cluster. So that node went down. It took down all the data on that node. But I have a backup copy of all that data living on the other nodes as well. So the service is stopped, right? As you can see, it stopped. Let's go back. Let me get all the keys again. What do you think is going to happen now when I get it? Oop, we got a transient. Let's do that one more time. There you go. I'm able to retrieve all my keys, and they're all coming out of either instance 1 or instance 2. So I didn't lose any of my data, even though a node went away. Right? And a node could go down because of patch Tuesday. It could go down because of a node failure, a hardware failure, whatever it is. But because I have HA turned on, my cache is resilient. I don't lose any of my data. It's just stored in a backup copy. We detect that the node went down, and we bring the backup copy and make it a primary. Question? Yeah, that's a good question. So the question is, if you have a 10-instance cache, do we have enough copies that even if you lose 9 out of them, you're OK? Let's get this out of the way. OK, I'm going to peel the onion and tell you what we actually do under the covers, right? We have partitions. So all the data that's in the cache gets put into partitions. And these partitions get placed evenly across all instances of a cache. If you have HA turned on, we have a backup copy. We have two copies of every partition spread out on all the nodes. So every key has one backup copy. Right? So it's only one backup copy. So if one node goes down, all the data that's on that node is available on one of the other nodes that comes back up online. If 9 out of your 10 nodes go down, chances are the primary as well as the backup went down. Okay. So if you have 9 nodes going down, then you will lose some data. That shouldn't happen because the nodes are spread out across upgrade domains and fault domains. So the primary and the secondary are never in the same upgrade domain. So even if you're doing an upgrade, it'll be in different domains. But that does matter when you're scaling back down. Correct. What we recommend you do is scale down gradually, right? So when you scale down from 10 to 9, we'll take the data and move it across the 9. Then when you go from 9 to 8, we'll take it out and move it across the 8. So we'll keep moving it out. Of course, you need to have enough capacity in your cluster. So when you have 10 instances, I assume you have 10 instances worth of data. If you're trying to shrink it down to 2, you need to make sure there's enough room in the cache. We'll do our best. It's the best effort to move the data if it fits. If it doesn't fit, there will be some loss. But if you are doing this kind of scaling, you need to make sure there's enough capacity in the cluster to handle that. Right? And of course, when I bring that node instance 0 back up, the data will get redistributed again across 3 instances. I'm not going to do that right now because we'll just keep moving with the next demo. Yeah, question? Yeah, that's a good question. The question is, if you have HA turned on, are you sending requests to multiple nodes? You're not. Again, the cache client is not aware of, it doesn't know instance by instance. It has a routing table, and it says, here's a key. Where do I go to get this key? And the routing table says, go to node X, and it just goes to node X. And node X will be the primary. It'll have the online copy of that data. Right? So there's still one request. On a put request, we'll put it in the primary as well as the backup. So every time you insert data into the cache, we'll put it in the primary copy as well as the backup copy, right? Yeah. It's in the client. It's in the cache client. It's in the cache. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't, but the cache client will, right? So the question is, how does the cache client get the routing table? I'll come to you in a minute. The question is, how does the routing table get to the client? When you create the cache, the data cache client, and the first time it connects to the server, it's going to say, hey, tell me about the cluster. Right? How many nodes are in this cluster? Who am I talking to? And it gets that routing table back, and then it knows where the keys are. Right? Let me go there first. Yeah? Yeah, so the question is, will VIP swaps work? Because you're literally swapping an app, right? That's like redeploying an app. You will lose data in the case of a VIP swap, right? Because it's all in memory. When you VIP swap, it's like you're pulling up a brand new app. In the case of rolling upgrades, what we do is we make sure that your primary and secondaries are kept in different UDs. So when you're doing a rolling upgrade, this guy comes down, the backup comes up online quickly. And so it'll still take the same amount of time, but again, the cache data will be there. It's resilient to that. There's another question somewhere there. Yeah. It's just a DLL that you reference, right? How is it kept alive? Yeah, I live with your app, yeah. But there's no state in the cache client, so it's okay if the... Oh, no. That's just a routing table that it'll get periodically. So it's not like you're going to lose state if you, say, deflate your web role, for example. You're not going to lose state on the client. When the client comes up, it gets the routing table, but then there's a periodic handshake. It makes sure that the routing table is kept up to date. So if you add more instances to your cluster, your client will know that there are, you know, 5 more instances across my cluster. Okay? All right, so we just saw HA. Let me switch back to my slides. And let's now talk about Memcache. I think I have about 10 more minutes to go. So we now support the Memcache binary and text protocols. We support it with both the co-located as well as the dedicated deployments. What this means is you can bring your existing applications that run against Memcached. It could be a .NET app, a Java app, any app, and just point it to an Azure Cache cluster. And with no code changes to your app, it'll just work in the cloud. In some ways, this is actually better than running Memcached itself on a worker role, which is also something you can do. It's better because you can take advantage of features like resiliency, right? So if you're running memcached and you lose a node, you lose the data. Because of the HA feature, you persist the data. Rather, it stays in the cluster. You don't lose that data. You can use local cache for much better latencies. Deployment is super easy, and I'll show you. When you log onto the portal, you can see things like perf counters. So in many ways, it is better than just deploying memcached on a worker role. So let's go look at what it takes to bring a memcache app into the cloud. So let me close this solution and open up a new one. Yeah. OK. So here I have a memcache web app. It's wired up with the NM client. NM is a pretty popular .NET memcached client. As you can see, it's referencing the NM client here. In my config file, here's my NM config. It's talking to a memcached server at 165. Whatever that IP address is. That's typically how you configure the NM client. And it's talking on port number 11211. And then in my code, you can see that I'm creating an NM client here, right? So all of this is memcached code. In two steps, I'm going to take this app, and I'm going to make it work against an Azure caching cluster, OK? So let's first make this a cloud project. That's actually step zero. That doesn't count. So add a Windows Azure Cloud Service project. It's going to wrap my app up, which is if it's an on-prem app, it's going to wrap it up into an Azure project. This time, we'll deploy the co-located topology, OK? So step one, again, as before, is to bring the cache cluster into this cloud service. We'll deploy the co-located topology here, which means I'm going to deploy the cache cluster on the same role as my app, which in this case is the web role called memcache web app. So as before, I'm going to go into the properties, into the caching tab. And again, I'm going to select enable caching. As before, the two radio buttons lit up. This time, I'm going to leave it on co-located, right? Because my app is running on the same role. That slider over there lets me control how much memory I want to give to cache. Okay? So I can set this slider to, say, 40%, which means 40% of the memory on each instance is available for cache. The rest is available for my app. Okay? And we have a capacity planning guide that'll let you, that'll help you choose what that value should be, depending on what you're trying to put in the cache. As before, I can have additional named caches. So let me create one just to show you something. Okay, let's say I have a cache called catalog. Okay, I'm done. I've now set up the cache cluster on the same role as my app. I need to do one more thing, which is I need to open a memcache endpoint, right? Because I'm going to be using memcache, not the Azure caching protocol. I need to open a memcache endpoint. So I'm going to add an endpoint. It's got a special name. It's called memcache_default. Anybody want to guess why it's called memcache_default? It's called this because all the data that comes on this endpoint gets put in the default named cache. OK? I can create another endpoint called memcache_catalog. And all the data that comes into this endpoint gets put in the catalog named cache, right? So again, this is something that you can't really do easily with memcached. But if you use this method, you can have different types of data living in different named caches and set different policies on them, right? I don't need multiple of them for this demo, so I'm just going to kill this guy and remove this endpoint. This is, of course, an internal endpoint. It's going to go over TCP. And my port number is 11211. Did I spell that right? Memcache_default, right? OK, so it's going to go over port number 11211, because that's what my client is wired up to talk to. All right, so I'm done. That's step one, which is I added the cache cluster, and I opened the memcache endpoint. Now what I need to do is I need to point my app at this cluster, right? I need to point my app from memcached to this cluster. All I do for that is I replace this IP address with another special string called localhost_the name of the role where the cluster is, which in this case is memcache web app. The reason it's a special string again is this lets us bring this up in Dev Fabric as well, right? So we do a little bit of magic in the back end. And so when you hit F5, like I'm going to do right now, this will again come up in Dev Fabric. As you see, I didn't change any code, right? I didn't even go into that CS file. I didn't touch any of my existing code. I just added the cache cluster, and I pointed my app at the cache cluster. So now when this guy comes up, the app's running against Memcache, right? It's the same app as we saw, the weather app. Seattle. You can put this in, and I can retrieve it. Right? Of course, we don't have regions and tags with Memcached, so this app is a little simpler than what we saw before. You can just do keys and values. But that's how easy it is to bring an existing application and just move it into the cloud using Azure Caching's Memcache feature. Right? So literally two steps. It's that easy. OK. Let's go back to the slides. Where's my clicker? Yeah. That we don't recommend. So hang on. Let me take that back. We don't recommend putting Memcache as well as Azure Cache data in the same named cache. Right? So I can have different named caches with different protocols working over it, but not the same one. There's a difference between the way Memcache does its hashing and the way we do our hashing that causes some kind of conflict. Yeah. Just different named caches, so you keep the data separate. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Correct. Correct. It's going to be twice as much, right? For every key, there's a backup copy, so if you have, you know, 500 MB worth of data to cache, and you want HA, you'll need to provision for 1 gig. Yeah, so I can show you that as well. No, we actually only support one, though. In here, backup copies, I can set that to one. So 0 or 1, right? We only support one backup copy. Okay. All right. On your web role, right. And there's a knob there you can tweak to define how much local cache you want to use. But yeah, that will add to it. Yeah. You can control how much you want to put in it. Yeah. Okay. So we're about done. Let's quickly summarize. I hope all of you do agree this is probably the best cache you have on Windows Azure today. It's deeply integrated with Windows Azure, ships with the SDK. It's designed to run specifically on the Azure PaaS platform. It's resilient, like we saw. I took a note down, but I didn't lose any data, right? So that's pretty powerful. It's feature-rich. We saw some of those features. We saw local cache. We saw regions and tags. You can really build more complex applications using a platform like this. And of course, really smooth developer experience, really easy, right? Even though the bits are in different folders, it's all done out of VS. Really streamlined, really easy. Okay. So what we'd really like for all of you to do is go give this a try, right? Go download the June 2012 SDK, try out the new cache, and tell us what you think. We have forums set up, so we'd love to hear from you. Tell us whether you liked it, what you'd like us to improve, or any general comments on this. And of course, there's that session later today where Shai will spend the whole session talking about caching concepts. So I focus on the product. If you want to know more about what to cache, how to cache, that's a session to go to. It's at 2:30 today. And we're done. Sorry? So the question is, when is GA if it's in preview now? I don't have an ETA. We're going to wait, we're going to take your feedback, and we're going to make sure that we have it right before we release it. So, yeah. Question?
Yeah, actually, I have a question. First question is, if I'm running a persistent VM, can I access the cache running the workload?
Okay, so the question is, if you're running a persistent VM, can you access this? At the moment, you cannot. This is something that will work only within a cloud service. So this is just part of the PaaS cloud service offering. We'll talk more about persistent VMs down the road, but at the moment, this is only a PaaS thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in terms of my persistent VMs, is there
Running this cache?
Not this cache, yeah.
So what we're doing with the persistent VM role is we're sort of certifying different applications to run on it. So right now we have AD, we have SharePoint, and we have, I think, SQL. Down the road, we hope to get Windows Server App Fabric running there as well. So we're not there yet, but that is something that, that we will get to. Yeah. Question in the back? Yeah, it's a good question. So the question is, what happens when you bring the node back up, the one that I killed? What happens when you bring it back up? When you bring it up, the cluster will detect that a node's joined the ring, and it'll redistribute data again evenly. My client will automatically detect that, and it'll know what to do. But when you re-add the instance, it's like inflating, right, growing the size of your cache. The cluster will detect it, and it'll redistribute the data evenly. Yeah, you won't run into race conditions like that, right? We come back up, we sync the cache up, and then it gets updated. Yeah. Sure, go ahead. Create a local cache based on the server bits. Oh, we have... an on-premise version of what I just showed you, that's Windows Server App Fabric. Right? So the on-prem version of what I just showed you is what's codenamed Velocity Windows Server App Fabric. Yeah, was there a comment, Sriram? Yeah, it's a good question. So the question is, what about websites, right? This is all cloud service. What about websites? Again, we're in preview, so it's only cloud service at the moment. That is something we're looking at, websites as well as VM, persistent VM. We don't have anything to say about it right now, but hopefully down the road we will. But right now, in preview, it's only available as part of the cloud service. So you can just put it on web roles and workarounds. Right? Yep. I'm sorry, does it support? Read through right behind sort of thing? Yep. Yeah. So on premise we have a provider, we have a provider model, read through right behind. We don't have that in the preview today. Again, something we're looking at, but right now that particular feature is not available. It's only available on premise. Yep. Yep. Yeah, so that's available on the portal. I actually don't have a demo of that, but when you log onto the portal, you can turn on just plain old perf counters, and that shows you your cache consumption, right? It'll show you things like how many get requests you're making, how many put requests you've made, as well as the memory on each node, right? So through the portal, you can actually monitor how much of your cache you've used up. And you can do things like scaling based on the portal. Right? And it's just plain old perf counters, so you can always just TS into the box and look at it as well. Yeah. So the question is, Velocity has, you say 30 gig, leave some room on before you fill up for things like that. Yeah. To start with, what we recommend is you plan capacity, just like you do on-premise. We have a capacity planning guide that will tell you, if you have so much data to cache and if you need so many ops, how do I construct a cache for that, right? So to start with, we recommend using the capacity planning guide. The eviction model that we have on-premise will work here as well. So if it's filling up, we'll start evicting. You can control the policy on that. You can say evict, just start evicting, or the least used objects can be evicted. You can use TTL to make sure that your cache is trimmed. And so, yeah, there are things you can do. But if it is filling up, then we will start evicting, right? So we will make sure that we don't top over because we run out of memory. Yeah. OK, more questions? Sorry, say that one more time. Yeah. Yeah. Right, if they're putting two keys in, they're two objects, they're two different keys, yeah. Yeah, but the cache, again, is we don't do anything with the values. You just tell us what to put in the cache, we'll put it in. Right? We don't try to parse it or do anything with it. Yeah. OK, any more questions? Yeah. No, you can put it in a static variable. You can have one. When you do a new data cache, that creates a cache client object, right? And that uses a particular set of config. You can use the same, that can be static. You can have multiple cache clients as well if for some reason you wanted to talk with different policies, like you wanted local cache for certain data and not have local cache for others. You can have multiple data cache client objects as well if that's what you wanted to do, depending on what you're trying to put in the cache. Extend the types of expirations. Yep. That is not supported. We have just the take off what's at the top of the list kind of thing versus what's been least used. Those are the only two we support. We don't support extending that. App fabric caching, is that still what you're looking for? Let me make sure I understand. Are you saying you want to have the same cache replicated across cloud and on-prem? Yeah, that we don't do. Yeah, we can chat about that. But yeah, again, on-premise, it's Windows Server App Fabric. In the cloud is what we just talked about. The goal is to bring parity between them. So the feature set, you'll find mirrors very, very closely. Yeah. OK, any more questions? I'll be around here for the rest of the day. So feel free to grab me in the hallway or something if you want to chat. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you guys hope you all learned something new. And yep, shoot us a mail, swing by. I'll be here for a bit more if you want to chat. Cool, thank you.